LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers, sitting on the best record in the NBA at 24-3. And as a fun reminder, this is LeBron's 17th season, which makes the fact that he's leading the NBA in assists for the first time in his career that much more impressive. And oh, by the way, he's played in every game so far. Here's LeBron on the theme of this season, load management.
If I'm healthy, I play.
That's just going to be your approach all year?
I mean, that should be the approach. I mean, unless we're getting to, like, you know, late in the season, we've clinched, and we can't get any better or any worse, and, you know, it could benefit from that. But, I mean, why wouldn't I play if I'm healthy? It doesn't make any sense to me, personally. I mean, I don't know how many games I got left in my career. I don't know how many kids that may show up to a game that are there to come see me play, and if I sit out, then what? You know, that's my obligation. My obligation is to play for my teammates. And if I'm healthy, then I'm going to play. If coach sits me out, then I'm not healthy. And it's just that simple.
A little dig at Kawhi there during the press conference. You think, Nick, that LeBron should take a page out of Kawhi's book and consider load management with where he is in his career and how hard he's been going so far this season?
No. Kawhi's book is its own book and needs to be, I mean, you said it, the theme of the season's been load management because of one guy. And it's hurt the standing of the league. It's hurt television ratings. I think for the average fan, they think the whole league's engaging in this when they're not. It's one guy who happens to be the reigning finals MVP. LeBron's approach is, of course, the correct one and has been his approach throughout his career. Aside from last year, where he suffered a major injury, there's only been one season where LeBron missed major time. His first year back in Cleveland, where he missed a two-week stretch dealing with a knee injury. Now, it became a bit of a punchline because while he was dealing with it, he went to see Ohio State win the national title, but he missed 8 games in a row dealing with a knee injury. Other than that, LeBron plays 76 games a year at a minimum every year. That's what he's done for the better part of 17 years. The team that invented load management, the Spurs, with Tim Duncan played 74 and 77 games in years 17 and 18. Dirk Nowitzki played 77 games in year 20. The initial load management was, you don't have to play all 82. It's foolish to play when we're on our third game in 4 nights and you're a long-term veteran and you might have a bit of a lingering something. Take the night off. There is no extra machismo and I've got to play all 82. But the idea that we would go from where it was, you should play 80 plus, to where it became, which is 75 is a reasonable number, to Kawhi's missed 8 of 28. He's missed a higher percentage than last year when he only played 60 games. It would be devastating for the sport if other people took this approach. And Danny, I appreciate what LeBron said at the end there where he said, I don't know what little kid came to see me play. If you watched them play in Atlanta, wasn't a little kid. It was a grown man right behind the Lakers bench in a LeBron jersey, ostensibly from Atlanta. They play there once a year. He probably bought those tickets 4 months ago. And if LeBron that night, even as a grown-up, for that fan who is what makes all this possible, if LeBron says, I'm taking the night off, that's the worst moment of the guy's sports year instead of the best. He understands his responsibility to the league in a way that the vast majority of our superstars also do. One happens not to.
This might be one of the favorite things I've ever heard come out of his mouth. Because I think it is sending a message league-wide. And I do think this was more problematic a few years ago when it was kind of becoming a status symbol. Oh, I'm good enough. I can sit over here, take the night off. I can, you know, load manage. I can take a rest and I can do that. You'd sit over there in your nice looking suit. It would be a status symbol. It was kind of a cool thing to do.
And what you're talking about was it was a really tough spot for the league because the two best teams in the West, the Spurs, who were the first team to do it, and then the Warriors, when they had KD, knew they were just going to coast through the regular season. So you had the two best teams in the Premier Conference, both teams engaging in it, which is where it really started to catch hold.
And then Adam Silver sends a stern message to the league, which everybody pretty much abided by except for Kawhi Leonard. But ultimately where we've come now is where Adam Silver can do all he can try to do everything. He can try to send letters. He can try to send warnings. He can try to send messages. it has to come from the players themselves that realize for the health of the game, we need to go out there and we need to play when we're capable of playing. And it can't become a thing. It can't be a status symbol. And that's where I appreciate LeBron as the face and the voice of the NBA, sending a message to every player out there that might be considering this. If he can do it, then I can too. Because that's really where the message has to come from. It has to come from the players. And if LeBron's out there voicing that message, it's going to resonate throughout the league.
LeBron is much more of a team ambassador, a league ambassador than Kawhi is. All Kawhi really cares about is, can I be there for my team? Or, you know, what about winning the title for this team right now, whatever it takes. And LeBron cares about the integrity of the league and people coming to watch him and all of it. It's a much bigger conversation with him.
I agree with the LeBron point. The Kawhi thing, we'll see. I mean, you know what would have helped the Clippers? If they had beaten the Bulls the other night in a three-point loss when Kawhi sat out his eighth game of 28 games. So I understand that what we've decided with Kawhi, which is the whole reason this is a conversation this year, that no, what he's doing is actually the selfless thing, and other shows will discuss, is LeBron being selfish by playing? Is he stat chasing? Is he doing these things? As opposed to, you show up to work when you're healthy to play. To show up to work, which has been the constant in all work, is sports sort of or otherwise, work. Since work.
It's
like,
all
I mean,
and
since
you
we
get,
were hunter gatherers, yes. If you can hunt and gather, work. You go do it.
And so you get an off season, you have off days, there are times.
And nobody's saying you gotta be all 82.
No.
Nobody's arguing.
The Chiefs picked up their fourth straight win Sunday against the Denver Broncos, a pretty dominant win in a blinding snowstorm. And while they have had their struggles, the injuries, that defense, they are two wins away from the exact same record that they posted last season. When asked if he likes the Chiefs getting slept on, reigning MVP Pat Mahomes said, quote, "I think I do." Danny, you think people are sleeping on Mahomes and the Chiefs this year?
I absolutely do, especially considering coming into this season, they were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. And what's changed? Like, I don't know. Like, it's the same roster. They got the same pieces there. I get it. Mahomes was hurt for a couple weeks, and he had an injury. But as he continues to get healthier, this team is a force to be reckoned with. And you saw what he did in the weather this past weekend against Denver. Didn't faze him one bit.
At all.
He's got so much natural talent. They have weapons on the offensive side of the ball. And I know the defense is still a concern, but I don't think it's a significant reason why you should be, this team can't win the Super Bowl. Their defense statistically is better than Green Bay's and better than Seattle Seahawks. And we talk about them as potential Super Bowl candidates. Why can't we talk about the Chiefs that way?
And neither Green Bay nor Seattle has the offensive firepower. Kansas
Not even
City.
Close.
Big difference last year. I feel like I said this a month ago. Last year, the Chiefs were 12-4. Everyone loved them. This year, they're going to be 12-4. Everyone's out on them. Of course, last year, 12-4 was good enough for the one seed. This year, unless New England loses to Buffalo, they're going to be the three seed. So there is, I understand that significant difference. But the defense is playing far better right now than it did at any point last season. They just added Terrell Suggs, who's got 4 forced fumbles and 5.5 sacks this year. We'll see what impact he can make in place for the injured Alex Okafor. But dating back to week 7, because the Chiefs were at their low point, I would say, after the back-to-back Indy and Houston losses. Mm-hmm. Indy, they played terribly. Houston, they gagged the game away. Here's what they've done since then. Denver, national television, watch their quarterback have his kneecap dislocated and annihilate them. Play Green Bay on national television with a backup quarterback. That game is 24 apiece in the fourth quarter. They beat Minnesota, a very good Vikings team, with a backup quarterback. And then the Titans game, a game they dominate for 58.5 minutes and somehow invent a way to lose at the end. Then the defense plays great. They beat the Chargers. The offense and defense play great. They beat Oakland. They go to New England and beat them. And they just annihilated the Denver Broncos. They haven't had what I would consider a bad game of football since week 5 against Indy. And they are finally, for the first time all year, healthy. Of course, right now, the Ravens have been the best team in football. I think the Saints are the most complete team in the NFC. After those two teams, there is no team you can make to me the credible case you should have more faith in than the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right, let's talk some Cam Newton now. Cam was shut down this season with a foot injury. At first, the Panthers looked great without him, winning their first four games with Kyle Allen. Since then, however, they have not. They've gone 1-7, and that's left the door open for Cam to return to Carolina. Cam would love to stay, saying, quote, "In order for me to leave, they got to get rid of me." So, Nick, should the Panthers move on from Cam Newton?
Cam's comments there were the single best thing to happen to the Panthers organization since they won the NFC Championship game against the Arizona Cardinals 4 years ago. Because their commentary of really openly opining about whether or not Cam would be there, when the only way he wouldn't be there is if he's cut or traded, and then their firing of Ron Rivera, who he and Cam had a great relationship, if Cam wanted out or wants out, he can get out. Like, what's not going to happen is a new head coach going to come in there and say, on a one-year lame duck quarterback who doesn't want to be here, this is who we're investing in. So their best option, their only chance at competing at a high level next year, is with a healthy Cam Newton. Now, we don't know if he's going to be healthy, but he has had now essentially a full season to recover, not only from the shoulder, but from the Liz Frank injury, the foot injury, out since week two for an injury he suffered in the preseason. So, no, they shouldn't move on from him. They have no viable option. They have not been bad enough to where they're going to have a top five pick, and I don't know how much people love the quarterbacks in this class to begin with. Kyle Allen obviously is not the quarterback of the future, and they love Will Greer so much it took losing 7 of 8 to go to the kid who they spent a third round pick on. So, yeah, of course they should keep Cam Newton. They're very fortunate Cam Newton ostensibly wants to be there.
Well, I think he wants to be there because the owner, David Tepper, came out and said, you know, Cam isn't going anywhere, right? This was a reaction to his comments. But I also think that it's the reality of the timing of how it works in the offseason. Remember, free agency is before the draft. So as much as you don't know if you like those guys, you may like a guy, you don't know if he's going to be where you want to draft. I also think there's the cost certainty of, hey, it's only $19 million, and we're talking about what Dak's going to make. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking on the plus side of $30 million. Mm-hmm. Mahomes is going to make in the $40 million. Aaron Rodgers, $19 million.
It's less than Nick Foles.
It's nothing for a guy who's been an MVP. Now, look, I don't love Cam. I don't know how it works. I don't know. Like, he hasn't been healthy. No matter, regardless of how many games he missed previous to this season,
there's
always something. He's a guy who's inaccurate. But it's really, really hard to find one of these guys. It just is. Don't believe me? Ask the Miami Dolphins. They've been searching for 25 years since Dan Marino walked out. Ask the Buffalo Bills since they lost Jim Kelly. Yeah, they're back in the playoffs. They still don't know if Josh Allen is the guy. It's really hard to find a guy. There's like 20 people on the face of the earth that can be a legit NFL quarterback, and Cam Newton clearly can. So this is Cam making the best. He has so much sweat equity. And I don't know if there's a better situation for Cam, right? Like, tell me a team that you know it works with Cam Newton, right? If you want to tell me the LA Chargers,
that's the answer.
The Chargers?
Yeah, I think.
I don't think so. Like, look, their wide receiving core is amazing. You're going from a guy who, Philip Rivers has his flaws, but he's crazy, crazy accurate, right?
Cam Newton is. He had been.
Accurate, sure. Right? You got Mike Williams. You got Keenan Allen. You have a legit big time tight end. I don't think the Chargers would give him a long term. Well, he wants a long term deal
right,
to go.
So
and no one believes he's going to be healthy.
I'm not saying the Chargers necessarily would have interest. I'm saying if I'm Cam Newton, if Dave Tepper had come out and said we're releasing him after the season, and Cam had his choice,
which by the way you can't really it kills your.
Of course, no, I understand, but I'm just saying I'm not looking at it from are the Chargers interested in him. I'm looking at it if I'm Cam, where I would people are going to say Chicago or Tennessee. Now Tennessee might keep Tannehill because those are good defenses. In Tennessee, a great running game. They are limited at quarterback. For Cam, the weapons in Los Angeles are amazing.
Yes,
where the Chargers, I think, would be interested is, man, they need a star and they need eyeballs. They are, forget the first, in L.A., Lakers, Dodgers, then maybe USC. Like, I mean, you're out there.
Yes.
Like, the Chargers do not rate at all.
Correct.
It's why, honestly, if you believe the Tom Curran reporting about Brady and his future, why that might make sense for the Chargers with Brady to go from one old quarterback to an even older one. But on Cam, for the Panthers, their only choice is him. This, and I have been remarkably consistent on this, even when Kyle Allen was going on that winning streak. You knew it wasn't sustainable, and you do have Doug, one of those 20 guys, I would argue when healthy, one of the 10 best in the world. You don't move on from him when he's cheap. It'd be different if they had to give him a contract extension, but they don't have to give him a contract extension.
Yeah, I just don't like the 10 best in the world. I just don't think he's a great quarterback.
When healthy, he was, at one point, the best in the world for a year.
No, he was the MVP. He was never the best
that year. Okay, that year he was the best quarterback.
But just quickly, what's the timing on it? Do the Panthers have the luxury of waiting to see if he's healthy before they decide?
Of course, they can do whatever they want. He's under contract. I mean,
he's under contract 1 year. But like, look, I think it's a prove it year. And remember, the Panthers could also franchise him if they wanted to stay. But I think it's a pretty easy prove it year. Prove it, one, you can stay healthy.
Right.
Two, let's see what coaching staff you bring in. Can you fit in? Do you keep Norv Turner as he's tried to evolve to this style?
To the Patriots now, who are in Cincinnati looking to get their offense back on track, or just on track, really. 34-13, the final, behind two touchdown passes from Tom Brady. Patriots get the win. Their defense was back to wreaking havoc, forcing five turnovers, including
five.
A pick six by Stephon Gilmore. Pats clinch a playoff berth for an NFL record 11th straight season. But Nick, from what you saw yesterday, how far can this team really legitimately go in the playoffs?
If they are fortunate enough to get a bye, which if they lose next week to Buffalo, they won't. And the way they're playing right now, that is absolutely in play. They lose to Buffalo. They could win. If they don't get a bye, they could beat Pittsburgh in round one or the Titans in round one, sure. And then promptly get beaten by either Baltimore or Kansas City, whomever they play in round two. That is who the pay. And if they do get a bye, they'll lose in round two to Kansas City. This was 10-10 when the Patriots are punting with a minute 40 left in the first half. And the Bengals do what bad teams do. They have a chance to go into the half feeling good about themselves, so let's muff the punt. Now we go into the half trailing. The Patriots had one drive that was at least 50 yards yesterday. And once again, by the way, credit to Josh McDaniels or whoever's coming up with that opening script for them.
Yep.
Because against Kansas City, opening script touchdown. The previous game against Houston, opening script, opening drive, they drove 80 yards. They settled for a chip shot field goal. This week, opening drive, touchdown. And that was the only extended drive of the... It's 10-10 and they're punting. Here's how they score their next three times. Muff punt, field goal, interception, short field, touchdown, pick six, touchdown, and onside kick, short field, touchdown. You know, Tom Brady was bad again, erratic again, and the offense once again looks like a major weakness headed into the postseason.
I'm with you. I think they have one playoff win and then they're going to get bounced, because teams that make deep playoff runs are balanced. You have to be solid on both sides of the ball, or you have to be all-time great on one side of the ball. You know, you think back to the Ravens winning with their, you know, all-time great, and you have pedestrian quarterback play. I think the Broncos defense was all-time great with Von Miller and company when Peyton Manning was not that great. This offense has issues, and I know a lot of the conversation is going to surround, well, is it Brady regressing? Is it because he's getting older? I think that has zero to do with it. I think it is the weapons that he is working with. The offensive line has struggled, and sure, he's not as mobile, but show me a time in his career when he was running around making plays. Never. He's not done that. And here's the problem I have. When you look at the box score and you see the leading wide receiver is a running back in James White, and they're trying to create offense different ways. Last week it was trick plays, a flea flicker. That was how they generated offense. They don't have many options as far as skilled players.
But a lot of that's the quarterback. Like, the idea that this is just the pieces around Brady have fallen apart. Man, he is missing guys. He is skipping passes. Yesterday, he throws the ball 29 times for 128 yards, and 23 of those, his longest pass of the day, was a dump off to James White, and James White navigated down the field for a 23-yard touchdown.
But you know who had less weapons than Tom Brady yesterday? Carson Wentz. Had no weapons yesterday.
But now he is mobile. And he's more mobile. He can run around and make plays. But this team.
I mean, whose fault is that? Like, look at some of these, though. Some of these are, I mean, I'm just, that guy's wide open.
He is. For Tom Brady, that's a
miss pass. Touchdown.
Absolutely is.
Now, this one, again, that's a drop, but that's also low behind him instead of being a touchdown. Watch these. I mean, who's that to? That's not the receiver's fault. Who's that to? That's not the receiver's fault.
Now this one's open. He's got to put a little bit more air under that so that he can catch that.
Come on.
Some of these, there's not very much separation. This bounce pass, no excuse for that one. That's on Brady. When you do see, though, this offense has issues. Yes, Tom Brady is a part of them, but I think we focus too much on him as opposed to the pressure. And like if you want to make any quarterback in the history of the game pedestrian, you get pressure on them. And it's, you remember when Sam Darnold said, "I'm feeling ghosts"? Mm-hmm. That's what I think is happening because their offensive line has struggled. I think some of those, Tom Brady might be feeling pressure that's not really there because he's not getting consistent protection, which he has gotten.
And because I do think he's being extra cautious during the regular season of not taking punishment because he's 42 years old, because he knows he has to be available for the postseason. And I defend him on that. I think that's smart. That's like an in-game load management, to use right. a loaded term at yep. the moment. But and you're saying maybe he's getting a little too much blame. Man, I watched the New England Patriots win a Super Bowl because Malcolm Butler made maybe the greatest defensive play in a big spot in the history of the league, and that was part of why Tom Brady's the GOAT. I watched them last year win a Super Bowl where the defense held the opposition to 3 points. That offense scored one touchdown, and it added to Brady's greatness. We can't do it to where when good things happen to the Patriots, Brady can ride off it even if he wasn't the leading factor. And now, when you have 128 yards passing, 37 of those yards total to wide receivers against the Bengals. Against people can say, "Oh, you saw the score. Look at the score." They turned him over 5 times. Of course you win that football game. This offense is a huge problem for them, Danny, and it's not getting fixed in the final 2 weeks.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.